Now I'm going to have to keep one of these in here because I didn't the other day and I didn't realise that the tape had ended. I try and strip back the technology so that it doesn't seem like Scott feels like they're having more of a conversation, but the other day I got called out because I didn't hear the tape turn off. Yeah. Do you want to put my glasses on? Oh, yeah. I can't see without them. And where did you travel from? What was your journey to Australia and then to
Israel? We left Israel.
Can you say we left Israel again, please?
Lataya.
Can you say we left Israel?
When we left Israel, it was 1958. And the journey took 5 weeks. In the boat, Castel Felice. And it was good journey. Just we reached Fremantle, it was the ocean playing, so the boat was up and down. But it was alright, it was safe and nice.
Couldn't have been 58 because I was born in 55 and I had my first birthday on the ship.
68?
No.
No, 58?
Couldn't have been. It had to be 56.
58, Douglas born.
That's right.
That's okay, we can correct all of this.
Yeah.
And what we do is from the recording, then we make a paper version. So this recording just becomes written words.
Right.
And there will be one long version and then there will be a short version. So that any mistakes I can just
correct it.
Correct.
All right.
Yes.
So that's it. We came to Melbourne. My husband, he had his cousin, Zura. And we were living on the top of the shops. But it was all right.
What were the shops?
And the shop was in High Street, St. Kilda.
It was in Brighton Road.
Now it's Brighton Road. We were living there 2 years. Then we moved to Brighton Road, opposite the state school, a new building. And I thought, well, that's better than over the shop. So...
And the new building was a block of flats, was it? Or was it
a block of flats. And it was, the first flat they built it in Melbourne.
Is that right?
Mm.
So there were deep.
It all was houses, no flats. And that's the first one we saw in Brighton Road. And I thought, well, opposite the school, that's good for the boys. We stayed there, I think 2 years or 3 years. And after that,
So was that on the corner of Dickens Street?
Not on the corner of Dickens Street. It's directly across Brighton Road Primary School.
The cream brick.
I think so. Yeah.
It's brick.
So the cream brick flats, you mean?
Yes.
Yes, yes.
And there's an empty block of land.
That's the one.
Yeah, next to the empty block of land. That's this empty block of land, it's already 50 years empty.
Is that right?
Well, since I am here, it's 50 years.
And it's been empty the whole time?
No, empty the whole time.
Just about to have a childcare centre built on it.
Really? So is that the council's property?
No, it's a private
childcare operator
that's building it.
Oh. Yeah, I don't think it's for the council. The council will do something.
Yes.
Anyhow, that's empty. What can I tell you now?
And so were you born in Israel?
No, I'm born in Baghdad, Iraq, where I'm from now. And I left long time to Israel.
How old were you when you left Baghdad?
Oh, 21, 22, something like that.
So you grew up in Baghdad, did you? And so do you speak
Arabic.
Arabic.
Mm. But if you want to speak Arabic, God help you. I can't remember it. But if I try hard, of course I remember.
And why did you move to Israel?
Because the trouble with the Jews and Muslims, and they were killing like slaughtering the animals.
So there was a lot of racial tension in Baghdad.
So anyone got really opportunity to leave. It was good.
Was there a big, in Jewish community in Iraq?
There were a lot. And they were very happy and rich and doing business all the time and work all the time. They don't get rich overnight. You need to work hard for it. And jealousy. So they think they own the country, it's their country. What the Jews doing here, it's like everything belongs to them. And that's what happened.
And so how many years had your family been in?
Oh, my grandfather born there.
So do you mind repeating that? Because I coughed.
My grandfather born there, it's 100% it's ours, really. We live there, but that's the way it's gone.
And so, do you know what year your grandfather was born?
There were generations of Jews who lived throughout the Middle East, but Baghdad was one of the fourth or central locations. So there could have been 8-10 generations.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And was there a particular country that people came from?
There was towards the end of World War II, there was persecution against the Jews right throughout the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
So in countries such as Iraq, Iran, Syria, Jordan, Lebanon, Jews were forced to leave those countries due to persecution.
And did that get instigated by the formation of Israel?
That was prior to. Well, it did involve that, but it also occurred prior to that as well.
But in contemporary times rather than in the past, because if they were there for generations, then.
It was also instigated by the anti-Semitism in Europe as well.
Right, so that was the catalyst for it. And had there been racial tension before World War II?
I don't really know.
The Jewish communities that were in the Middle East, did they come from all over Europe, or was it particular?
No, they'd been there for generations. They were not European. They were Middle Eastern.
Okay. So there was no European origins for those communities.
No,
absolutely not.
Okay.
Right. And in terms of religion, they were the same people, but in terms of national ethnicity, they were Middle Eastern, that they were not European at all. And even and very often even racially, they were different.
Well, it wasn't like today. People, they go from country to country and choose where to live. It was just Muslim, and that's their country, and the Jewish and the Christian, living there years and years and years. So that's the way it was.
And are there any Jews still in back there?
I don't think so. I don't think at all.
So when you left Baghdad, there were a lot of Jews packing up and leaving at that time?
Well, it wasn't easy. The first, they didn't give anyone to go out. After 2 years, 1 year, they changed their mind. Let the Jews go. So most of the people, they ran away before they allowed.
And did that mean that they had to leave behind their...
Everything. Now, when I came to Israel with my father, they are allowed to take 30 kilograms. You know what, 30. And that's all. And the rest, just to leave it. No money, no nothing. So that's the way it was, very bad, very hard. If you got house, you got property, they took it.
And who claims the house and property and businesses?
The government. The government takes everything and that's it. God knows what they do with it. They keep it for themselves or something, I don't know. It wasn't easy at all.
And did you go with your family? Did you live with your family or did you live with a single woman?
No, I lived with my father. My mother and my brother, they went without, you know how you say, without passports, you know.
They smuggled themselves out of the country.
Yeah, and that's the way most of the Jews go to Israel or to go to... They couldn't... A lot when they give to go, they go to London, to America. If they got somebody in Europe, they went. But most of them, they went to London. That was good connection. America was far further out. But if you have a relative, then it's different, easier. If they want to help.
It must have been a very frightening time.
It is, it is. It was a very bad time. Everyone, they didn't know. We didn't know exactly which way to be better. And that's how a lot they took chances and trouble without any passport, without any, yeah, pay money a little bit and someone help you to come to the right place.
Was it dangerous to travel without passport? Were there stories?
Of course it's dangerous. If they catch you, God help you. If they didn't catch you, you are lucky. They did it. That's the life.
So did you join your mother and brother in Israel?
When we came to Israel, we joined everyone together. And that was good. It wasn't easy because the life in Israel, it's not easy, especially coming without money. We had to live one week, I think, was in tents I had my sister before me there and my brother, so they come and took us, and that was okay.
So did you just speak Hebrew then? Or?
No, he didn't.
Do you two speak in English together? Or
sometimes Hebrew, sometimes English.
He cuts good.
So did you speak Hebrew at home?
That was my initial mother tongue, but only at a colloquial level. I don't understand the news if it's on the TV or something like that, if it's in Hebrew, so it's just a very basic Hebrew.
When he was very young, I was trying to speak Hebrew with him, and I thought when he go to school, he will learn English, so he will have two languages. But I speak Hebrew, he answers in English. And they give up.
Well, you have the right idea, because that's how you teach children to be bilingual. Yeah. Is you know, you speak the one language at home, and
in Israel, the children, they speak beautiful two, three languages, because the parents, they pass through Europe, and in Europe, German, all sorts of languages, every second door. So the little ones, they learn very quickly.
So, did you meet your husband in Israel?
Yeah, I met my husband in Israel. And
can you tell me about him?
About him. He was a very clever man, very handsome, stubborn. He got his idea. He will not change it. And if he wants to do something, he will do it. He decides and he will do it. You can't stop him. What more?
Or did he see you and say, I am going to marry that woman?
Well, you believe it or no, in 3 months we got married. He can't do it these days. We met, we were in Turkey really, and we met there, and from there, start, you know, to go together. And that's it. When he came to get married, he said, we married in my birthday, and that's the end of, and that's just the 3 months between. And we lived together till he passed away, 42 years. How about that?
Dad was Bulgarian.
Yeah, he was Bulgarian, and he spoke 6-7 languages. Reading and writing. It's just...
Well, he actually spoke 9 languages. He could get by with 9 languages, but 6 he could speak fluently.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, he is.
And when did he go to Israel?
He went 1941. And also he came in very danger boat, and it was 100 of them, I think he said, in the boat, and the boat was moving with the waves. But very sure I thank God.
And was it a fishing boat, or was it a cargo boat, or military?
Old-fashioned boat. It's like the fishing boat. I got the picture somewhere, but it's like the fishing boat. And that's it. It was hard for him, very hard. But it was hard being in Israel to leave. And
do you remember the discussions that you had about leaving Israel? And the reasons?
Well, it's very, very hard for me was he wanted to travel to come here. And for me, all my relatives there, and Marco was baby 1 year old. I didn't really wanted to come. But then he wanted to come, and as I say, he is a stubborn. So it didn't change, and everyone was excited. You're going to Australia. Don't be silly, you go. You know, everyone pushed, say something, and I said, oh, well, I will count it as a holiday or something. That's here. From the year I came till now, it's 50 years.
And what made him want to come to Australia?
He read the book. Books about Australia. Was one shelf all about Australia. Read and read. And he said, that's the best country in the world. I will go there one day. And his cousin was here, and the cousin was from Vienna. He's Bulgarian also, but he was all the time in Vienna. And when we got married, after a few months, he said, Ahuva, can I write a letter to my cousin to take us? I said, no way. Forget about it. After 2 or 3 days, he repeated the question again and again. And I said, well, all the time before I got married, he asked him a few times, and he didn't bring him. He didn't help him. So I thought, well, if all this time didn't help you, he will not help you now. You believe it or not. Next week, we receive letter. He's doing everything good for him to come here. And that's it. And we came.
And so he's the cousin that lives above the shop in...
No, he owned his own
shop.
He owned the shop.
Chocolate and potteries and furniture. Also
there was a number of
furniture.
There was a number of stores that he owned. They were side by side. One of them was furniture, one of them was a chocolate shop, another one was
pottery.
And was that on
High Street, St. Kilda?
Which side of the road? Are those shops still there, or are they the ones that got demolished when they widened the road?
No, no, still there. And the son, he sold it. It's five shops together or six together. And inside, he separated, you know, put that's for the pottery, that's for the furniture in the back. He had big factory, and his furniture was the best in here, and the chocolate. People, they come from Adelaide and Sydney to buy chocolate from him.
His name is Zeus.
I'm sure if your father and mother, they know him.
The name is familiar, I have to say. What was his first name?
Aaron.
Aaron. So, that's it. After he died, his son, you know, a young one, they haven't got peace, and he sold it. And that's what happened.
So we were up to, you were living opposite the school, so did you go to the little apartment?
No, we ended up going to...
No, after that, it was a bad time, no work, no money. People struggling to leave, and we were, I wasn't working, just my husband working, and we were paying £11 a week, and that was too much for one person. I went to the agent and I told him we're leaving, and I told him we can't afford it. Anyhow, we looked for a smaller one and cheaper, and that was in May Street. May Street, by that time, Marco was 5 years old and Douglas was two and a half, something like that. So, I thought, well, better I do something. I am trained nurse. So my husband, he said, do you think you can go to work? Well, I said, I haven't got choice, and I was so lonely. I haven't got opposite my flat or opposite people. They don't say good morning or hello, how are you? They open the door and quick close it before I see her. And that was the way. I thought that's Australian people who you wanted to come. And, you know.
So was that in May Street, or was that also
in... All the time. In May Street was better because it was different people living. That was in Brighton Road, opposite the school.
And was that because you had an accent that they were like that?
Well, foreigner. They call it foreigner. Well, they are right. Well, I'm foreigner. But it's not nice. It's really not friendly way, I would say. Anyhow, that's the way. No, I say to the newcomer, I said, they laugh. that's it.
So it was better in Main Street. And so some of that, you know, attitude of discrimination, because there was a big Jewish community here as well. Was the Jewish community more welcoming to foreigners?
I didn't have any connection with anyone. I did it. And that was bad things. So my husband was working from 7 to 7 every day.
Where did he work?
He started with General Motor Holden. And that was very, very hard for him. But he didn't tell me. I knew he's not happy, but he didn't want to go back. And we stuck here. That's it. We like it or not, we have to fight, he said. We have to try again. And that's the way it's going.
So did you ever feel like, you know, this was your neighbourhood and feel a sense of belonging to?
No, not
so
really.
So you're almost quite isolated.
Well, it's very hard. After that, I decided to go to work. I thought maybe that would solve the problem. And I will have more people to talk or to be busy. So Marco, he went to school. Douglas, he went to kindergarten. I went to Prince Henry and I asked for a job. I showed her my certificate and things. And she said, all right, you can start. I said, I want to do night duty. And she said, how can you do night duty and you've got a husband and two boys? I said, that's the idea. My husband will just sleep with them at night and I know they are all right. And during the day I am home, I will look after them. And the matron, she was lovely. She was really good. The first people was kind and talk nicely to me, she was. So she said, that's the way you go, you want it, all right, I'll give you night duty. So I worked 2 years in Prince Henry as a night duty sister. And Christmas time, it was nice time, and the matron, she said, where is the sister from Holy Land? And they said, she is here, and she could come to sit beside me. So she took me beside her, and she served me to my plate. She put so many things I could say, so the plate has to go. She's again starving. Anyhow, everyone was surprised how she's eating it. And that was nice of her. And she was good. She was very good. No question. And I was there 2 years, and I thought, well, I better go to Alfred Hospital. Everyone, as they said, good there. I didn't tell you before I went to Prince Henry, I went to Alfred, and it was the old building. And opposite the Alfred Hospital is the park, the big park. I was sitting there and thinking, what a bloody hospital, what sort of building there? How they can treat people in this way? In Israel, everything new and the last fashion. And I saw this building and I said, oh no, I am not going to work in here. It's silly brain. And I went back home and I said, and my husband, he said, no, what happened? I said, nothing. I sit in the back and I came back. And I saw in the entrance was water for the horse, and the horse was drinking water. And I thought, oh my God, that's 1,000 years ago. Anyhow, my husband, he said, you are not buying the building. You are going to work there. It doesn't matter, maybe they are good. I said, no, I'm going to Prince Henry. I went to Prince Henry and they took me, and I was happy for 2 years. And then everyone asked me, did you try to go to Alfred? It's very good, it's very knowledgeable, things like that. Anyhow, after 2 years I said, well, I go to try. I went and told them all what I know. And they said, yeah, we need sisters, always we need sisters. Give me your address. And I will write to you. You believe it or no, didn't pass 24 hours, I received a letter, can you come? And got a job for you. And the job was a new thing, dialysis for the kidneys. And Marco, you doing the drink? Thank you. So it was new, and I received the letter. I said, God, I never know that. What they do it? We didn't have it before. And I rang the matron and I said, I am sorry, I can't come because I don't know what you want from me. That's a new procedure. And she said, my girl, my lovely girl, or something she put, we don't know. We want you to learn. Thank you.
Thank you.
We want you to learn and to teach us. I said, oh my God. And my English wasn't so good either. I said, well, in this case, I will try to learn. And she laughed. She said, you must. You haven't got choice. And I said, no one knew anything about it. the doctor being in charge, he goes to register. He asked him to go to London to learn what to do and to come back to teach him. Anyhow, he came back and he started teaching. He said, "Your head and my head, come on, I have to show you what to do." And he showed me, and it was very interesting, a new thing, very good. I started to prepare everything, the procedures, and they were very happy with me. Every day something new, something good, what, the way I work, the way I prepare the things, they appreciate it. And then I said, the patient was in the ward, and we did the procedure in a special room. And that was 64, 63. And after that, it started really, we had a lot of patients. And I didn't want, and I was so attached with the patient, after a while they died, and young one. So it was really upsetting me. I went to the matron and I said, "Can you do something?" She said, "I can give you just the outpatient, but I haven't got a vacancy now." I said, "I'll wait." And after 1 month, I think she called me, she got outpatient job. And I was in the outpatient 70, 75. And I had 9 clinics, 9 in the morning, 9 afternoon, and 6 doctors in each clinic, 1 trained nurse, 1 first aid nurse, and we had to manage all these people. And we managed. I managed all right. I enjoyed it.
So you didn't see your mum much during that period, because that sounds like a very full-on job.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
so
they were really marvelous. Now I think about it, I thought, God, I was lucky. They come from the school. I prepare in the morning something to eat for 4 o'clock, and I said to sit, watch TV till I come. And after 1 year, they start to prepare dinner and set up the table.
We would have been
10, 12.
We used to prepare dinner for mum and dad when they were home.
And set up the table, everything ready.
Roasted chicken, potatoes.
It was really a marvelous way. But I was lucky.
So what do you do now?
I want to enjoy the life.
Mm-hmm.
I work hard. I did everything what I could do. And now I don't want to work. I don't want to cook. I want just to enjoy. Can I do that?
And what sorts of things do you do? Do you go out, or are you a member of a club? Or?
I am member of bowling club loan. I am member of Proverbs, and they keep me busy. What?
Tell us about the bowling club.
What do you want to know?
Where is it?
Well, about men and women, about 90 people. We have to wear a uniform, a flat shoes. We play 2 hours in the morning, 1 hour, maybe 2 hours afternoon, and that's one game. Uniform, we have to wear like you are in the school. You have to wear the uniform, and tidy and clean, polish shoes.
And is it local?
It's local. It's Brighton Road, Glen Handy Road. The hotel is a big hotel there. Or next to the golf. Yeah, in Glen Handy Road. And we got Sunday playing, Tuesday pennant, and sometimes Thursday or Friday. About two shows.
And are there people from around here that play, or is it more from Elston, Wickham, Glen Huntley?
No, most of them around here. Because there are another club in Esterwick. So it's really very close one to the other. And now it's really very hard to keep going. They can't afford it so much because people dying, getting old, not to play more. So it's very hard to keep up with everything.
So how long have you been a member there?
12 years.
And how did you, who introduced you to bowling?
No one. When I retired from work, I thought, well, I retired, I enjoy it, but it was awful. What to do? By 10 o'clock, I clean the house, I cook for the night, I prepare, and I am all the day free. Well, and I make headache for my husband. Come on, we go here. He didn't like to go out every day. He has a garden, and he enjoys it, and that's all about it. He doesn't want to go. We went for a walk, and we passed the corner of Tennant Street and Brighton Road, and member needed for the club. And he said, oh, well, look what. Can you read mine? I said, yes, I can read it. What are you thinking? He said, come on, we go to ask if they got room. We went to ask. Oh, we're open arm. Of course we have. And that's how I started.
That's a very nice story. and you're now. You know, you play a lot every day, nearly.
Well, not now. Now I don't play. You know, for after a while you get really, you want change.
So how did you join the progress then?
Then I went to the progress. It's from 2 months I am member there because I want a new faces. New people, and they have to have meeting, and if they can have me or not, because full up and things like that. Anyhow, they took me.
What does Probus mean?
Well, Probus is business association. It started 74 in England, and from England, 70, nearly 80 start here, and that's it.
More. Where do you meet?
When?
Where? Where do you meet?
Where? They have to rent home. And the home they rented is the bowling club. And this is so they were, how I know about them, they were coming for meeting in our club, in the bowling club. And I said, well, that's the new faces. I go and ask them if I can join. And they are really very good. Every month they have trips around here, and we have barbecue lunch, and we go for nice places a lot. And then we come back. By 5 o'clock we are back. And that's the day, enjoyable day finish.
And what made you decide to live in Elwood? What was it about Elwood that...
Elwood and Sankeda, it's just like you're born there, you know. You feel that's your home. If I want to go somewhere else, it would be strange for me. It's like you go change country. You get to know the shops, the business, the everything. If you need anything, you know exactly where to go to find it. You go for a walk to the beach. It's a lovely area.
So it's part of the attraction, the fact that you can walk a lot here?
Yes, I used to walk a lot. Now I fell and hit my foot. Now I'm not playing or walking because it hurts. Maybe another week or 2 weeks will be all right. Cross your fingers.
And do you know very many people now in Elwood compared to when you first arrived?
Oh, much more than before. People, you know, one day my neighbor was there and we go for yoga at night. We have to dinner. And I was walking Byron Street and someone, Ahuva, Ahuva, I know some God. Do I hear something or no? Because I never know one called me in the street. And I stood and she said, I am here. So, surely that's the first time someone called me in the street. And we start laughing.
So that felt like it was really home then, if somebody calls you in the street.
Well, like you feel you are not lonely. Someone know you. You know, you feel good. That's all.
Beautiful.
Did I speak enough?
I think so. Maybe we'll talk to Marco for a while and then we'll see how we go. So Marco, you grew up in Elwood.
Yes.
And so tell us what it was like growing up.
Well, I went to Elwood Primary School, and there were a lot of kids at the school, but even at that age. And then Elwood Central and Elwood High School. And I think at the time, Elwood High School had approximately 1,100 students, which was a lot of students compared to today. The school almost had a split personality. Part of the school was very academic, and that was a legacy from the past.
What was that legacy?
The legacy was in terms of high achievement academically.
I think there was
a strong Jewish element to that community, but the school itself also had a reputation of a good academic reputation, and then there was the other half which didn't really care for academic achievement that much, and it was quite rough. And at the time that I was going there, the school was experiencing a transition from one to the other. And they had streaming at the school. They had streaming so that you were streamed either into the language field or the science field or into the commercial field. And I took the commercial field, but I didn't really care much for it. And the classes were very different too in terms of streaming. I think the average class was about 40 students, and
and
there were students also from it was almost like a feeder school from Port Melbourne and Middle Park, and that was part of the transition the school was experiencing.
So why did people not go to other parks?
I'm not sure exactly the reason why. I was just aware that students from Albert Park and from Port Melbourne were coming into Elwood.
And was there a big immigrant
population?
Community?
I couldn't put a number on it, but I remember when I was in fourth form, I'd say a good quarter to third of the class were migrants from many different countries.
Having just arrived, not that recently, or more established?
Well, probably having arrived over the last 10, 12 years, something like that.
And the language is spoken amongst the students?
It was just all English.
They all talk English.
Everyone spoke English. And the country was actually going through a period of assimilation. Foreigners, were meant to assimilate in those days. And there wasn't so much recognition of multiculturalism as there is today. I mean, Australia today is very much a very different place to what it used to be then.
And so were there, gangs of kids, not gangs, I don't mean that, I mean were there cliques of kids, and did they fall into any kind of grouping?
Oh, well, there were, I don't think people clicked in terms of staying together with their own ethnicity, but there tended to be gangs of kids, and there was a really rough element to the school. But as I said, there was that other side as well. It was almost as if the school had a schizophrenic personality.
And you told me on the phone that there was a bit of a seedy side.
Oh, there was a seedy side, yeah. When I was in fourth form, the second form girls had a prostitution racket across the road, and I remember kids also being belted up due to extortion. They didn't hand over lunch money or whatever. One boy a year younger than us had four front teeth missing, and the police were brought into it as well. And there was a very seedy element to the school. Yeah.
And so, who set up the prostitution racket? It must have been an adult, surely.
But from what I heard, it was an older brother of one of the girls.
Who?
An older brother of one of the girls.
And was it local? Was it within the school?
Across the road in the Glockenfeld.
So it wasn't sort of like, so it was kids selling each other?
Basically. And there was that seedy element at the school. It wasn't, in some aspects it was a good school, in other aspects it was not. It was quite the opposite.
And so what was this area like growing up in? Did you have lots of friends?
I think when we were kids and we lived in May Street, you just mucked around with the kids who lived in the block of
Park
here in
Howard
nearby.
All right, thank you.
And you played on the street. And you don't see that many kids playing on the street. You played cricket on the street, you played football on the street. You made a lot of racket and noise, and you did what kids do, naturally. And there wasn't this concern where parents have to oversee everything a child does. You were let free, and you did virtually what you wanted. And I think that was actually very healthy. These days, parents actually, for whatever reason, they tend to mother their children far too much.
And so, what kind of adventures did you have?
I remember when I lived in the block of flats we used to, there was, next door, there was a large yard and a house, and obviously a man who lived there and catered after his food tree, and we used to jump the fence, and not to pinch any apples or anything, but just to explore. and in May Street, at the end of May Street, there was a stable that looked after horses, which we used to deliver the milk. And when the horses came, we used to run after the horses as they carried their load up and down
the street. Do you mind repeating that?
Sorry.
Just so that if, you know, we take a little bit of tape from the interview, if the microphone tape is the phone.
The phone is well,
just about the horses in the street.
Well, there was a stable of horses that we used to deliver the milk. And we used to run after the horses. We used to hear them coming in, and we used to chase them. And it was there were small things that you just looked forward to.
Did you ever get a ride on the car?
No, we never got a ride. But I mean, the horses were the fascination.
And they were draft horses.
And they were draft horses. They were quite wealthy.
And so, do you know who owns the dairy?
No. Well, it wasn't actually a dairy. It was just stables. There was a dairy at the end of the Tennyson Street shopping centre, and I remember that specifically. I think it said dairy there. Now there's a supermarket there now, but that used to be a dairy, as opposed to a milk bar, and the stable for the horses was at the end of Main Street.
Because I think that one of the people that I interviewed, their family
owned.
Owned it.
Owned the dairy.
Yeah. Or ran the dairy. Or worked in the dairy. Uh-huh. You know, it was a family
business. Yeah.
Well, in Tennyson Street, it was horses, breeding horses. Big house. Now the council took it and neighborhood house.
Was that?
Yeah. It was a huge, still it's a huge place.
Probably.
And now they got computer, they got everything you want to learn English, to learn cook. My children, little ones. So it's so big, huge house. The rooms, it's, I don't know. And they were Australian people. Rich one, and that's big area from Tennyson Street.
And the backyard's enormous.
Yeah.
Really enormous.
You know the place.
I do know the place. Because there's a toy library there as well, and my son goes there.
Mm-hmm.
Or did, he's 12 right now.
Yeah.
So I remember we used to go down to the beach to Elwood Beach, and they used to have a what they called the Dolphin, which was a pontoon that was, I don't know, 200 metres from shore, something like that. We used to swim up to there and we used to dive off there. Do you remember it at all? It was just a platform that stood out of the water and had a ladder which you'd swim to, and then you'd climb up onto the platform and you'd dive off. And there used to be stingrays around there and jellyfish, and you could dive off near the stingrays and jellyfish, and it was a lot of fun. But perhaps, I'm not even sure the reason why they pulled it out could have been because it was old and it was maybe a bit dangerous, but I'm not even sure if that's the reason.
Is that the swimming pool?
No, it was just a platform in the middle of Elwood Brook. Do you remember it at all?
No, I don't.
And
I didn't go off in St
Kilda. Okay. And, yeah, that was a lot of fun. And I think that not having that there anymore, even though, you know, it wasn't really much, is somewhat of a loss in terms of, you know, the fun that you can have, or kids can have.
And did you go down the beach with the family?
Yeah.
A lot. Nearly every weekend.
And did you meet other families there?
No, not really.
Not really. It's just everyone for himself or for their selves. They don't mix. It's big difference in Israel. You say shalom, and shalom, it's finished. You can start talk and be friendly in a few minutes. Here you can do that. Anyhow, you get used to it.
I think that would be quite a big thing to adjust to. If you come from one place that was very open and friendly to people not being so friendly.
No, it's I don't know. Anyhow, that's the way it's going. You can't change people, especially if they are English. The English is seven. Are you English? before I say something.
Oh, I think that my family background is Irish and Scottish rather than English. My husband is English, so I know very much about Indian family. So I love English families and that
reserve. But I don't say anything.
Yes, yeah, so you can say as much as you like.
No. It's very much a cultural thing, because I remember when I lived and worked in Papua New Guinea, and over there you just speak with anyone on the street, and you don't need introductions or anything like that. It was just really very, very friendly in many ways. And I came back, and every time, I had a few visits over there, and every time I came back from New Guinea, the difference was the cultural difference. Was starting.
No, I find that interesting, Marco, because I grew up in Bentley, and you know, my mother was a gregarious woman. I mean, she still is. She's the sort of person that if she catches the train, she lives in Yarrawonga. She'll always end up sitting next to somebody and talking to them the whole way. It's a poor person. And so my recollection of growing up was people always striking up conversations with each other. Now that might be, you know, a kind of small town, suburban
mentality.
Right, yeah.
Absolutely.
Not here.
You can just go to Brighton over here, and people are friendly over there, but it's almost as if that it's not necessarily their accent, but they've got a different way, they've got a different diction, and it's almost as if they've got a tongue in their mouth, you get the feeling that people in Elwood are actually more down to earth than people in Brighton, or that their enunciation and diction of English is reflective of status, and you can tell that it's just by the way they speak. There's a difference between people from different neighbourhoods, but it's a slight difference that, you know, that you pick.
I had one woman in the bowling club. I don't know how come the conversation, but she said, "You know, you are not Australian." I said, "How come? You don't speak proper English." I said, "But you speak proper English, and how many languages else do you speak?" She said, "Just English." I said, "Well, that's not good enough." So, you know how they take it, some, especially, she is 90. I am sure she is back.
You were telling me about leaving when your husband said you can't take anything with you. And you left all of your presents behind.
Yeah, my husband, he says everything we can buy there, you don't need to carry it from Israel to Australia. So I give away all my things and I came here without anything. And I sit in the flat and I look around and I thought, my God, what I did, big mistake. And that's what happened. Yeah.
And that was the second time you had to leave somewhere with nothing.
That's right.
And start from nothing.
Yeah, that's the second time.
And so did you get all new things?
Oh yeah, of course, we need it. Well, we can't live like that. I mean, the relatives, they helped how much they could.
And how, can you remember how much that was?
What?
How much they helped you?
Oh, they let me to do the nappies in the washing machine, do all my washing there.
That was in Israel?
No.
Well, you didn't have any relatives here.
Aaron.
Oh, Aaron, sorry, okay.
You forgot him.
Okay.
Yeah, they help. They help how much they could. They just press on me when it's sunny. Take Marco out and go out before it's rainy. And I think they are cuckoo. It's sunny, you know. In Israel, if in the morning sun, it's sun all day, all the week. And suddenly here you push me every time to go. And the other thing was sunny and nice, and I dress him light things and for the weather. And God help you, I reach just the end of Inkerman Street or somewhere, and it starts rain and wind and miserable. And I said, oh, to go back, run back. And that's it. Till you get used to the weather, till you learn how to dress and what to take with you when you go out. It's funny how you learn. Experience is good.
Well, some people never learn about Melbourne weather, and every now and again I think everybody gets caught out, don't they?
Now in the summer I take raincoat with me and a small jacket, light one, and that's, I know it. Or I will use it or I will not, but with me.
I remember too one thing that was different, that was, and it didn't just relate to Elwood, but it was a cultural thing. I mean, now people follow the cricket and the football as they always have, and now, you know, some people follow the basketball too, but that doesn't compare to the cricket and football. But in those days you used to watch the cricket and the football and TV ringside on television, which was boxed, and that was much bigger than what it is today.
And wrestling too.
Yeah, but the difference with wrestling, I mean, wrestling, there were theatrics in wrestling, and people knew that then too. I mean, it wasn't Greco-Roman wrestling. It was in inverted commas professional wrestling, but you knew that the boxing was much more legitimate.
It wasn't Killer Kowalski.
No.
Yeah.
So and yeah, that was, people were avid about watching TV. I think it was every Tuesday night people used to watch that.
And were women interested in it, or was it mainly
generally
women?
No, it was mainly.
And were you interested in it?
Yeah, I like watching it actually. Yeah.
And did you watch it with your
dad? Dad used to like the wrestling more, but I used to like watching the boxing, yeah, definitely. And that's something that is very different. You don't see that anymore at all. But that's across the Australian crowd.
And I asked you the bit that didn't get recorded about the proximity to St Kilda and whether or not that's part of being...
Well, a lot of students who didn't actually live in Elwood lived in St Kilda. So, you know, there were lots of stories about what different people did. Like, for example, I remember one boy saying that every time the horses used to bring the milk, sometimes he used to go out and see if he could, you know, pinch some milk as it was delivered to people's homes.
So he was a bit of a scallywag.
Yeah, he was a bit of a scallywag.
Is part of the attraction of living in Elwood the proximity to St Kilda? Because a lot of
I think it is. Yeah, it's close to eat today. Well, I mean, it's close to the Esplanade Market, and once a month there's a market in the peanut farm, and Mum also used to go to English classes afterwards at night. Used to shear suit
I work full time. I look after the two boys, bath them, prepare them to go to sleep, and then I wash the dishes and went to the school to improve my English.
Which school is that?
Eric. And do you think I could open my eyes? I was so exhausted that I forced myself to do it. And that took maybe 6 months like that. Every time running 7 o'clock till 9 o'clock, 2 hours. And then from running around and worry and not resting enough, I had rush in all my body. And everyone did test everything and nothing wrong. The blood test, the allergic, everything tested and nothing. So one day my husband, he think and he worry and he said, "What about to go for a holiday and leave everything?" And I said, "All right, who will look after the boys?" He said, "I'll look after them, don't worry." So we did the passport and it was the first trip, 74. I went there, 16 years I haven't seen them. You know how many people they come 1 o'clock to I thought the queen coming.
Everybody was there for you, were they?
With the flowers, with chocolate, and they are so happy, screaming, just like anyway, that's the first, my first trip was, the rush. Much easier, much better. I couldn't believe it. I said, "These bloody doctors, they prick me so much and give me all tablets and things. And why they didn't say you need holiday break?" Those simple things. And it improved and it was all right. But I learned my lesson. I stopped learning English. I said, "Time to go to rest. Over. No more English. They have to understand me how I talk."
And so that was the last time that you went to English class. That was in 1974, was it? And were there a lot of people in that class?
Yeah, they were.
And where were they from?
At least 10 o'clock, all around the area here. They live. Oh, all sorts of Russian, Hungarian, I think was one woman. They were different. I can't remember exactly the things. I didn't talk with them. 9 o'clock finish, I ran to bed. So I didn't want to talk anything. But when I was working in Alfred Hospital, they helped me a lot. They were really different people, not like my neighbor was. They if something they didn't understand what I mean, they said, "Well, can you repeat it?" And I repeat it better. I make myself more clearly, and that's it. And I, believe it or not, 25 years I worked there.
That's fantastic.
I remember in school, too, when I was in fourth form, we had combined class. It was 3EF and 4EF, and there was, in terms of Asian students, but not in the subcontinent, there was one Chinese student. His name was Bristow Chan, amongst two classes of 80 students, which is very different to the sort of the makeup that you've got today.
And they would have been, he would have been a Malaysian student?
He was quite up, I'm not sure.
I remember at my school in Michigan High, there were some students that would come out, like overseas students.
He was resident here. He was a resident here. Yeah. He wasn't. He wasn't here.
He was
on,
a local.
Yeah, he was
yeah.
a local.
Yeah.
But there was only one Chinese student. It was just amazing. And it's also interesting to think about how many people actually grew up in Elwood, went to school in Elwood, and actually are still here today, living. And I don't think very many at all.
Don't you?
Not that I know of. I don't know. I don't know anyone my age who has who is still living in Elwood. They've all moved.
They've all moved
out. I think that's. I don't know. Is that usual? Is that common in terms of residency?
Look, I don't know. I've met a few people that. Was still in Kinnan, he went to Kinnan High, and I think that's weird. that you stay where you grew up, but then that probably corresponds to the fact that I couldn't imagine anybody ever wanting to stay in Kinnan. However, in your case, Marco, I think we do have a move from Melbourne.
I lived and worked in New Guinea for a number of years, and I lived and worked. With Aborigines in Arnhem Land, and I've been overseas a number of times, so I've always used Elwood as a base more than anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really think I've been.
What I mean is that I don't know. However, my view is coloured by the fact that I couldn't wait to get out of where I grew up.
Where you grew up.
Whereas if I would think it would be, I would think. Like you think that well, people are here. I mean, I know lots of kids of friends who still live here. They grew up here. They're born here.
In where you mean Elwood?
Yes, but all from Kilda, but they're in their early 20s. So there's a different generation.
Yeah.
So that was sort of the beginning of the subculture kind of hippie thing.
Yeah.
And it makes total sense for me. Well, why would they ever want to live anywhere else? Because
of the comfort zone.
Well, you can walk anywhere.
Well,
you don't need to drive around.
Well, that was one of the attractions that Mum found here. I mean, you get public transport to the city, and everything was within reach.
Everywhere, and not just the train. The train, the buses. It's you can't go anywhere like that.
Absolutely, whereas if I sort of view, the suburbs, if you grew up in the suburbs, the first thing you do is just get out here, or alternatively, go travel the world, or even in other places the way you did. So I'm probably the right person to ask, because I've always lived in the inner.
Yeah, well, I don't know anyone who actually still lives in England, who I went to school with. And I think that's a different. I think that's a big challenge.
Do you think it's because a lot of people, because there's a lot of flats and as well?
I think because it's close to everything. They want to go to the city.
That would be a reason for them to stay, not to go. We're talking about why students of people who I went to school with that aren't still in Elwood because they've moved elsewhere. And I don't know, I just think it's weird.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think whether or not there was anything that you said that I didn't record, and my apologies for that.